The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, number 98 for April 3rd, 2007.
Greetings, folks, and welcome to the show. You know me, I'm Dave, and he's John. We're here to talk about all kinds of things this week. We have far more than we'll have time for, but that's good because it means that we're sure to be back next week. We are a day late. I had a scheduling conflict, so here we are. Hi, John.
Hi, Dave.
You were just waiting for me to stop blathering, weren't you?
Pretty much. Yeah. So we had April Fool's Day, and you know, I was just amazed at the amazing coordinated April Fool's joke about there being a major music store offering DRM free music. I just thought that was the most incredible thing to see everybody chip in and contribute to that, because
yeah,
I mean that only happens in Bizarro World.
But. Like it was crazy, man. Because I don't always check my email at the house when I get up in the morning. You know, usually I wait till I get to the office. But Monday morning, for whatever reason, I check my email, and Dave Parmet, our PR guru, had asked me. He said, "Do you have?" You know, he sent me the links to all the stories that were happening about this thing. This is like 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. Eastern, right? So we're an hour away from the press conference. And he says, "Do you have anybody that can comment on this?" Because you know he tries to get us coverage. And so I started looking, like, oh boy, yeah. And I went to Lisa and said, you know, you got to get the kids to school, or, you know, kids fed and on the bus, because I got this thing going on, and this press conference is happening in like 45 minutes, and no one knows. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I woke everybody up, and well, Jeff was already at his desk, you know, Jeff Gamut, and we got it going, and we did the live coverage of the thing. But here was what was interesting. We did. And this actually leads right into our first tip here, John. And you didn't even know that, or maybe you did. So I was able to get the live audio stream. It was just an audio stream of the thing. And it happened, of course, at 8 a.m. Eastern on Monday, because it was 1 p.m. London time, I believe. Paris time, England time. I don't know, wherever it was. It was 1 o'clock.
EMI.
It was 1 o'clock EMI time. There you go. Perfect. So it's irrelevant. So I got the stream going, and Jeff and I were IMing back and forth on iChat trying to coordinate things. And I said, okay, I'll do the live coverage. You do this stuff. And he says, oh, nuts, I just lost my stream. And he said he can't get it back again. The servers must be too full. And I thought, oh, wait a minute. I've got Audio Hijack Pro, and we've got an iChat connection. And so with Audio Hijack Pro, I hijacked my Safari audio, which is where the live stream was playing. And then I routed that to SoundFlower via auxiliary device output, right? So I created an effect. I didn't even mute it because I wanted to hear it. But I created an effect. I hijacked Safari, routed it via an effect to audio to auxiliary device output to SoundFlower 2-channel. And then in iChat, I went and set my incoming audio instead of from my microphone to SoundFlower 2-channel. So that effectively created a direct link between the two. And then I fired up an audio iChat with Jeff, and sure enough, he was able to hear the stream. Now, I was hearing him clicking, so I just, you know, took the little volume slider and slid it down to the left, and away we went. It was great for the hour, you know, no problem, and everything was cool. So I was actually really, really proud of myself that with about, you know, 3 minutes of being able to think about it without it being too late in the day, we came together with all that. So there you go. That's the
nice. Now, just one thing, SoundFlower.
Yeah,
I think I've never had an occasion to use it, but to me it sounds like
you're using it right now, believe it or not. Well, you're benefiting from it right now. Yeah.
Okay.
What
I'm
sound?
Using it through your console, but it's some sort of audio driver that gives you additional capabilities that you normally don't get in your Mac. I guess a sound control panel.
What it does is SoundFlower.
Something like that.
Allows you to create a virtual, or it is a virtual audio device. So normally you can only route sound out to physical devices, speakers, earphones, you know, whatever. It could be USB based, or it could be just, you know, through the audio output jack on your Mac, or built in speakers if you're on a laptop. But those are your options for routing audio out. And the same goes for in. It has to be a physical device, the internal microphone, the line in, you know, some sort of USB mic, a FireWire device, something, right? What SoundFlower lets you do is just what I did. It creates a device inside your Mac that you can point things to and from without actually having to send them out. So I took the audio from Safari and routed it out to SoundFlower. So now SoundFlower is this, you know, device which registers itself as incoming and outgoing audio. And so it was collecting the audio from Safari because Audio Hijack Pro told it to. And then I was able to grab iChat and tell it to take that audio as an input into its, you know, outgoing.
So it sounds like a digital sound router.
Bingo.
Of sorts.
That is a perfect yes. And it comes with Audio Hijack Pro, though I believe you can get it separately. In fact, I'm sure you can get it separately.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't think we ever started with a tangent, but that was a good one because I was curious about that.
Yeah.
I've seen it, but I've never used it. Yeah. So.
Now we use it now, and I won't go into the details, but it effectively allows me to route things the way I want to make the podcast doable the way I want to do it. So now, talking about unconventional ways of routing data, we'll let Daniel take it.
Hey, John and Dave, this is Daniel from the Friday Cast. I just wanted to send in a comment about a comment you guys got on a previous show. There was someone trying to set up a network, and he didn't want to drill through walls and stuff like that. So, you know, there is one more alternative, and that's Ethernet power line adapters. I know Netgear, Linksys, and Gateway, I think, all make them. But what's really neat about these is that you just plug them into the electrical outlet in the wall, and it does it all right there. You don't have to string cables throughout the house. And you can... And then you just plug it into the wall near your computer and then have the Ethernet cable go from it into the computer, and you have a whole network right there without wireless problems or wired problems. Anyway, great show. Keep up the good work. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, so Daniel is absolutely right. This stuff can work, and the new round of it, which uses the Home Plug AV, I believe is what it is, they say it'll do up to 200 megabits a second. Really, it does about 100, maybe a little less, but that's, you know, certainly more than you're going to get with most wireless networks. I won't say all, but certainly more than you'll get with 802.11g. And, it seems to me like that would actually be a great way of, if you've got, you know, a wireless router in one corner of your house and you want to broadcast from another corner, you set one of these things up and then bridge it with the remote router and you're good to go. But it's not cheap. Yep. It's about $100 a piece. And of course you need two of these devices to make it work. So that, you know, it's not horribly prohibitive, but $200 to, you know, it's cheaper than drilling through the walls.
Yeah. So, well, no, it depends. So if you, I had a couple of thoughts.
Cheaper than paying a guy to drill through the walls. Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah. But no, I heard in the early days that some of these, and maybe it doesn't apply because, you know, I'm not an electrician, but I thought some of these had issues depending on how you had your electrical network wired, where you had, you know, the source and branches and all that fun stuff. I guess what this leads to is this is what I recall from early products. I mean, it sounds like, I mean, I looked online and it seemed nobody had an issue, but then I would question how far did these go? I mean, if it's going to, especially, I mean, if you have a house, you pretty much know where it goes, or
right.
Do you?
Yeah.
But especially if you're in a condo or apartment or something like that, you may be sharing electrical networks with a few other people. So to me, that would be just a wonderful opportunity to, you know, ruin somebody's life.
That's a good point. You know, I hadn't thought about that. Where does it go? I mean, yeah, because if you hook up a generator incorrectly, like, i.e., you don't put a disconnect box in, right, and you just plug a generator into your, you know, to one of your outlets, and that'll actually work, right? And if you've got no power coming in from the outside, it will, you know, distribute power. Power goes both directions, no problem. But the reason the electric company doesn't want you doing that, the reason they insist that you put a disconnect box in, is in case that poor guy is out there working on the line and doesn't expect there to be power coming from your house. If you don't have that disconnect box, there could be, and it, you know, it could cause some great, certainly great surprise and potentially great harm. So given that as their concern, power certainly travels in both directions. There's no, you know, one-way switch. I don't know. I don't know what kind of filters they put out there that might, you know, disrupt this Ethernet over power signal to the point where it's no longer valuable. I don't know. That's a good question, though. It makes you want to, you know, worry about security. And I know these things do QoS. Yep. To ensure consistent bandwidth, but do they do any sort of security between the two?
Well, I have seen some of them, from what I could read, just doing some quick research, they have something very similar to your wireless base station.
Okay.
You know, for example, if you own a Linksys wireless base station, you probably should change the name from Linksys.
Linksys. And the password from password, or admin, I guess, is...
Admin, yeah. Yep, yeah. And a blank password, I think, on some models was the default. So
right. So
that's what they recommend. You know, just change the name. I mean, it you know, if somebody's determined, they'll get you. But
yeah, it
keeps... especially Powerline, I think that's pretty rare.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so the Netgear HDX101, which is one of these devices, I'm looking at the specs here, and it does say that they all use encrypted security, so... Presumably, you know, it doesn't...
Nice.
Yeah, let's hope. Our sponsor for this show is Audible. Happy to have them on board. Audible is offering all listeners of the Mac Geek Gab a 2-week free trial of their Audible Listener Gold and one free audiobook download, but you have to click the link in the show notes. It's the only way you get access to that deal. Audible, of course, integrates with iTunes. It's compatible with just about every portable audio device, though of course there are some that it doesn't work with, but your iPod certainly and all the major ones out there it'll work with. Audible has over 35,000 audiobooks to choose from. You can listen just like you can to this show, and again, you get a free audiobook when you sign up through the Mac Geek Gab special link. Some of the books that they have, I Was, How I Invented the Personal Computer and Had Fun Along the Way, which, of course, by Steve Wozniak. Stephen Levy's The Perfect Thing, How the iPod Shuffles Commerce, Culture, and Coolness. And the Icon book about Steve Jobs, the greatest second act in the history of business. So Audible at audible.com, but click the show notes. Click the link in the show notes to get that one free download and try it out. And with that.
Wow, that was the Steve trifecta, I think.
I did do the Steve trifecta. I didn't even realize that. I was actually picking at random from this list here. You gotta love it. Louis, take it away.
Hi, John. Hi, Dave. It's Louis from Madison. Say, on your collaboration piece, another simple way, I think, if the user is willing to use it, I think Google Docs is a great way to collaborate and share in real time a spreadsheet or a word processing document. In fact, I just was teaching a class, and I had all the students go into a word processing document and add things at the same time, and it was really kind of neat. So that's another possibility. They could be updating the spreadsheet and always have the latest updates that way as well. Thanks.
I'm so glad this comment came in, because last night at band rehearsal, we were talking about, somebody said, and I'd been thinking about it, but didn't want to be the one to constantly bring up, you know, issues, because, you know, the squeaky wheel sometimes doesn't get the gig. And I really like this band. So, you know, but I'm me, so I can't keep my mouth shut too long. Somebody just cracked the egg and said, we really need a place to keep our calendar, not our gig calendar, but our personal calendar. So we know that if, you know, one guy's going to be away 1 week, well, you know, if I'm thinking of going away, I might as well just go away, because, you know, I know it's not going to interfere with any of our gigs. And so I set it up today using Google Calendar, which is the same sort of thing. It's a collaborative calendar, and you can make it private or public or whatever you want. This one happens to be private because no one else needs to know when we're all going to be on vacation, but there you go. So, and then tonight you and I started experimenting with the Google Docs thing.
Yes. Now, what made me sad was... when you go there, it says Safari support for Google Docs is coming soon. Though it seems to work, which is weird. Maybe it just chomps processor.
Not entirely. No, there was some things I was trying to do that didn't work.
Okay, but they say Firefox, SeaMonkey, or Camino for now. But I'm sure Google, being the good folks they are, will fix it. But yeah, you and I were trying this. So I guess through the magic of Ajax and all that, we're basically able to collaborate on a document and bold it and type in new stuff. It took a while sometimes, unless you explicitly published it.
Right, right.
But you invite people to share, and you can do things. So that You know, I think that's pretty impressive, you know, now that you have bandwidth that can handle that sort of thing.
That's right. You know, speaking of bandwidth, last week when we went to upload the show afterwards, normally it goes up, you know, I've got 768K upstream here, and that's how fast it goes, minus whatever our Skype traffic takes when we're chit-chatting after the show. And last week I noticed it went up at, you know, 3,000 kbps. Mm. And, yeah, so this Comcast has this power boost thing and where it speeds up your downloads sometimes, and now it started speeding up our uploads, which is great. Huh. I'll take it. Yeah. So
sounds like someone's learning how to configure a router.
Yeah, that's right. No, it's good.
And
it's been,
you.
No, it's been that way through. And I actually looked. I didn't know it was coming, but I looked online and there was an announcement saying, yeah, it's coming soon. So that's good. It's here already. We'll take it. So, you know, before I said, when I sent that thing to Jeff, I took my iChat volume slider in the audio chat and set it down all the way to the left, because I didn't want to hear Jeff clicking and clacking on his keyboard while he was covering this thing. And then a couple hours later, my brother iChatted me for a video chat. And I started up the video chat, and he couldn't hear me, but I could hear him. Mm-hmm. And it hit me. Like, wait a minute. I muted my sound before. I set the volume slider all the way down when I was on the chat with Jeff. So I just got to, you know, set that back right. But there was no way to do it. When you're in a video chat, iChat's volume slider doesn't exist. At least I couldn't find it. So I had to cancel the video chat with my brother, start an audio chat with him, bring up the window, see the volume slider, drag it all the way to the right, and then I was able to do it again.
Couldn't you mess around in the sound preferences or no?
No, it's not sound preferences. It was iChat's preferences. Oh, maybe it was sound preferences. No, it wasn't. No, because I could hear sound from everything else.
Okay.
It was just, yeah, it was just iChat sound.
I'm just
yeah.
suggesting
yeah.
there may have been a slider there because I know it, you know, output and input can be controlled from the
yeah. No, I, no,
sound
I was,
preferences if I could, you have a driver, so.
Yeah, no, it, oh, yeah, no, wow, that's a good point. No,
just
it was, no, because I could hear other things. Yeah, he could hear me is what it was. Sorry, he could hear me, but I couldn't hear him.
So it was app specific.
Okay. It was app specific, yeah, and there didn't seem to be a way to do it without opening up an audio chat window, which was, mm-hmm. I thought, kind of an oversight if you so for those of you that didn't know the folks at Apple, you can tell them on our behalf. I don't know what that means.
On your behalf, maybe.
On my behalf, that's right. This is very important to me, because you know this happens once every 10 years. So Safaris writes, on your last podcast, you mentioned that iTunes doesn't have functions to control updates per podcast. And actually, it does. You can set global preferences, i.e. keep last five or keep all unplayed. But if you control click an individual podcast subscription, you can say do not auto delete, which means you can preserve for posterity all the episodes of that podcast, which, of course, is something I'm sure all of you do with this one. And he's right that there, so there is that lone podcast specific control, but I still use Castaway, so it manages all that for me.
So they're sneaking, which is Apple, like they sneak in features here and there, but never totally crush the shareware vendors, at least usually not.
That's right.
Unless there's a major OS update, which is coming.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
So I'm just going to blather a little bit more because I had all these cool things happen this week.
Blather on, brother.
Yeah. So I'd been having this issue on my computer, and some of you had written in about it, where GoDaddy.com would not load and in Safari, but it would work in any other browser, and it worked on some of my other computers too, but it wouldn't work consistently on my MacBook Pro. And again, I'd heard from some of you about this and couldn't figure it out. And I talked to GoDaddy and I got some of their techs on the phone and they were very helpful, but you know, I couldn't figure it out. And it wasn't, and it was as I would enter their secure site. So I could load their homepage fine, right? But I couldn't load, once I logged in, I couldn't see anything.
Because they're doing a HTTPS
right.
connection.
That's
which
right.
Which does SSL, which leads to what you're going to talk about.
Yeah, but I checked other sites, like my banking sites that are all secure using the HTTPS connections, and they were all fine. And
okay.
And so, you know, I was tearing my hair out. And so I I wrote Scott Barman, who, you know, is our white hat hacker, as he prefers to be called, and explained the situation to him and said, you know, man, I know you might not have time, but if you do, you know, the geek could use help because it was driving me crazy. And so he did. He gave me all these things to try, but so a lot of them were, you know, destructive. Delete your preferences and delete this and delete that and clean out your keychains. And maybe there's a certificate that's bad and all this stuff. And I thought, okay, well.
Now to just level set here, though, yep. what was happening is I think you were going to a secure site. And what secure sites do is they check this thing called a certificate. And in this case, the certificate was from GoDaddy, correct?
It would have been. That's right. Yeah.
Okay, and certificates are a mechanism underneath the covers where you usually don't have to worry about it at all, where you connect to what we talked about before, the HTTPS site. There's something called a certificate that secures the connection, but the thing is, depending on who gives it to you and how they process it, I guess you could call it signing, yep. That could cause some... So one of you... Not too much more detail, but just yeah. To pull back
no,
here.
This
that
is
we're
good.
Talking about
this
a certificate,
good.
Which is... I don't want to get into the public private key thing, but suffice to say, the Safari and the browser know about all the major people that issue these things called certificates, which
That's
are
right.
used to help secure the connection. Now, what you're going to get to, I think, is where there was a little misunderstanding.
Yeah, that's actually a good way of saying it. Yeah, so this certificate, when your computer first accepts the certificate, there's a negotiation that happens, and you confirm that the certificate is good. And yes, it's trustable because it's coming from a trusted source, or you as the user say, yes, it's trusted. But this particular certificate, like a lot of the ones that you use, actually just came right on your Mac. It's installed with OS X, and it's right there by default. And Apple has basically said, yeah, you should, you know, trust this certificate, which is fine.
So they're from the people who issue certificates, give this information to Apple saying, okay, you know, we'd like you to, and other people who make browsers. They
yeah,
say,
Firefox
like
manages its
this.
Own, right.
Yeah, and they just give this out publicly because that's part of the protocol. And if it's not in the browser, then the browser is going to say, I don't know who this is.
That's right.
So okay. GoDaddy, and we looked at this, is one of the people that's listed in Safari.
That's
at
right.
Least.
Yeah, well, in the system keychain, right? Because this is impacted more than Safari, so I realized. So one of the things Scott said is, go into your keychain access, go to the preferences, and go to the certificates tab and check to see if any of the certificate validation protocols are enabled. And he says, if they are, turn them off. Now, by default, they're turned off. But now there's two of them. One's called Online Certificate Status Protocol, or OCSP, and Certificate Revocation List, CRL. CRL is older than OCSP, at least in implementation, if not an idea, and someone's going to correct me on that if I'm wrong, but I think I'm right. But OS X ships, okay, OS X ships with both of them disabled, and the way I understand it, that's how it should be, because it's up to the certificate when you receive it to authenticate itself and convince your computer, either via you or via some automatic way, that yes, it's a trusted certificate. What these two things do is check your trusted certificates, or previously trusted certificates, against some sort of online database, the certificate authority's database, to make sure that it hasn't been changed or revoked or disabled or anything like that. Apparently, GoDaddy's certificate authority does not support the OCSP protocol, and if OCSP is on Safari, Mac OS X, which is what Safari uses, it doesn't do it internally, it uses system services to do this. Mac OS X goes out and says, is this certificate valid? And it waits for an answer, and waits, and waits, and waits, until it finally times out, and that's it. So that's what was happening. I turned it off, and instantly everything was better. In addition to Safari, it was also faster for me sending mail with essentially signed email certificates that I have, and presumably for the same reason. It OCSP was delaying this process. It wasn't stopping it like it was with Safari, but it was certainly delaying it. And by turning that off, it was instantly, much, much orders of magnitude faster there as well. So Unless you have specific reason to have them turned on, they should be off. And if you're having trouble connecting to secure sites, check that preference. So that's the lesson that I learned.
Ooh, that pegged the geek meter.
Yes,
I did. And I worked with that too. Actually, and you sent me when we were trying to debug this, you sent me an email and had an attachment that had your certificate. Now, of course, I'm using Eudora, which I still like, and I've been using for 10 plus years. What happened is when the email came in, it didn't say anything specifically. It showed me the file attachment. I'm like, oh, I know what that is. I think it was a
P7S, right?
P7S, which is PKCS7, which is a protocol. Much like the certs, I think, are PKCS11.
Okay.
So if you look up those public key, it's a standard. Okay. There's a couple of them. There's PKCS11, PKCS7. They're standards for how to deal with crypto information, including certs. But when I clicked on the file, macOS 10 is smart enough, and it started up the keychain saying, oh, this is Dave Hamilton's certificate. Do you trust it? And, of course, I said no because... I said yes. Sorry, a little slip there. Of course, I said yes because I trusted it and because it was signed by, was that a GoDaddy one? I guess it was.
No, that was from Thoughty. Yeah, or Thought or okay. Whatever they are. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. T and then a W. What? So, anyways, yeah, because it was signed by somebody that is known already to the Mac OS, said, okay, cool, just... You know, tell me to import that, so I have your cert now. From what you told me, though, mail automatically verifies the signature. I don't know. Does it say it in, like, a status bar or something?
It does, yeah. You got from, subject, to, date, and then there's another line that appears that says signed. And then, of course, if you had mail, now that you have my cert, you could send me encrypted mail because you know how my public key...
And which then is what a cert is, which is a public key signed by someone else's private key.
Right. So there you go.
About that one.
Yep.
Excellent. Notes does that too, I notice. You know, in the workplace I use Notes, and Notes can, for the most part, import certs as well. So if you get a message from somebody and they choose to sign, the problem is then you have this issue of cross authority signatures. And so when we get mail from people who are in other Notes domains, it gets all confused, but anyways, moving right along.
Yeah, I think we're going to jump to our questions here because we've got some good ones, and I didn't want to let these go, even though, here it is. Paul, take it away.
Hey, John and Dave. This is Paul Michaels from Wichita, Kansas, and I've been a fan of you guys for a long time, watching probably about half your episodes. I've downloaded the rest, and great job, guys. Good job. And I've become interested in one of the topics you guys have been going over. It is the VPN stuff that you guys work on. And you guys would talk about going to hotels and being able to set up wireless stuff and VPNing to your houses and stuff like that. And I've gotten a VPN router that says it sets up VPN, and it works for Windows. Good for Windows users, but I've not figured out how to get it to work on a Mac. I'm just wondering, maybe one, is there a piece of software that I need to get? Heck, if I could pay for it, even I'd do it. Or is there a Mac-friendly VPN server that works with the built-in VPN, some sort of other? You guys can get back to me.
The answer is yes, yes, and yes. There's all kinds of stuff available. Mac OS X, and John, I've done some of this. You probably know a little bit more, but Mac OS X out of the box supports PPTP or point-to-point tunneling protocol and IPsec as protocols to connect to a VPN. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what kind of router you've got there, Paul, but most home level routers are going to probably be PPTP servers, and if that's the case, you just open up Internet Connect and go to the VPN menu, I think, or the Connect menu, and there will be an option to create the VPN, and it usually just works. I mean, you've got to have credentials on the server, so you've got to have previously set up yourself, a username and password for yourself, but otherwise it should just work.
Yeah, and you have two choices. Again, you say PPTP, which I think is something that a lot of the Microsoft products use, and then L2TP over IPsec.
Okay.
So level two tunneling protocol. So they're two very popular. And if you use, as you mentioned, the Internet Connect utility within OS X, now, of course, you can connect no problem if you connect to somebody running macOS 10 server.
Of course.
But then I guess we're kicking around right now some of the options. Now I came across one.
What did you come across?
Well, openvpn.net.
Okay.
I was poking around online and I was looking for, I didn't look in detail. I believe it is going to be a server, so that's something to look at. Though I think you were leading to that there are also a lot of, depending on the routers, especially if you use some of the routers with, you know, like our favorite firmware, DDWRT, which gives you all sorts of extra goodies. And I think you've done this more than I have, which is, and I think one thing is being able to tunnel in securely.
Right.
Now, which do you use on this? Or no, you do like SSH, I guess.
No, so I use on the DDWRT. I just use PPTP, point-to-point tunneling protocol.
Okay.
It's what I had set up years and years ago on a Linux box, and it just I'm not my reasons for doing it aren't those of security so much as they are of getting a connection here when otherwise one might not exist. So that's the trick. So,
yeah. So I'll explore OpenVPN a bit more.
Okay.
And if any listeners, of course, you know, what do you use if you're not using macOS 10 server and the built-in Mac utility?
Well,
We'd like to know. Well, I use Cisco personally because, well, the workplace.
Right.
I think it's a PIX they have. So leading to your comment before that, most pieces of hardware from major vendors will have one of the open protocols or a client.
Yeah. Right. Or their own custom client. Now, I know there's a piece of commercial software from Equinix called VPN Tracker. Mm. I've never had reason to use it, but I have heard great things about it, and it essentially takes the job of connecting. Remember, OS X is Unix under the hood, so just about anything is possible. VPN Tracker makes it also easy, from what I understand. Like I said, I have no firsthand experience with it, but from everyone that I've talked to about it, it takes this concept of connecting to non-standard VPNs and streamlines it in a way that makes sense from the user's standpoint as opposed to the standpoint of us geeks here. So if perhaps for Paul that may be the solution. I believe it is a for pay solution, but if you're just looking to get the problem solved, that might be the fastest way to do it.
Yeah, because I see here I'm looking at the Apple utility, and for a L2TP protocol connection, user authentication, password, RSA Secure ID, certificate, Kerberos, or crypto card. If you know what I just said, then you probably don't need this product.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
if you glazed over, then it sounds like you could computers will never be totally easy to use, especially when you're talking. I mean, this is pretty
deep
geeky stuff here.
Yeah.
This VPN connections, unless someone set you up, all the pieces are known in the plumbing, but it can get kind of squirrely sometimes.
Oh yeah, it's gotten squirrely for me. The only reason and this is why you asked me, what do I use? And the reason I continue to use PPTP is because it's what I started with. And even that, and it works, and I understand it. And I was able to take my CHAP secrets file, which is the password, the credentials file from my old Linux machine, and paste it into the router here, and keep it. Now, it's not an overly complex file, but it was nice to know that, look, this works here. It should work here. There's no guesswork involved anymore because it took a lot of hair pulling and trial and error. I had to recompile the kernel on my Linux machine years and years ago to get it to support it. Yeah.
Well, that's nice. But it's cool that you had a CHAP file, that being Challenge Handshake Authentication Protocol.
And the geek meter just keeps on getting pegged.
Which sounds like a keychain of sorts.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, yeah.
That's nice that you could transfer that over from an older installation, so you don't have to redo all that stuff, which is annoying.
And error prone, right? Because anytime you got to retype something, who knows? So, moving on to something
next,
a little more accessible, perhaps.
Hi, this is Michael from Scottsdale, Arizona. I have a quick question. I was hoping you guys could help me out. I have a old G4 laptop computer, which my two-year-old son jumped on, so he actually ruined the disk drive. So in my haste one day, I was going to shut down the system, and I got the spinning ball, so I just pressed the reset button and closed it up. So now it won't load. I get everything loading up. It's running system 10.4, but it just gets to a spot where the spinning ball, after all the network connections and everything is going, and it just freezes. Now, I do have a iPod that has 60 gigs, so I have another computer that I actually can load Disk Warrior or Disk Repair on, but when I try to plug it into the PowerBook, it doesn't recognize it. I tried holding down a C button to have it, you know, load from a different drive, but it won't do it. Is there any way that you guys know that I can actually have my computer or do this repair? My phone number.
All right.
First issue here.
Yeah.
We got to do something about the 3-year-old.
Oh.
Sorry.
No, yeah. So to boil it down, I mean, essentially, this is a computer that has a non-working CD drive, the reasons for which are best left in John's hands. No.
But the CD drive is damaged, but the hard drive sounds okay. Well, physically okay, but...
That's right. So, yeah, the idea here is, right, we need to do disk repair on a drive that is unbootable. Now, the first thing you could do is boot up from into a single user prompt, right, and try that, because it might work. Who knows? It's possible.
I would try something else.
What would you try?
I would try, perhaps, if it has a FireWire port, target disk mode, because I think he mentioned he has another... Did he mention he has another computer?
He did. He did, yeah.
If he does, then target disk mode, perhaps.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Target disk mode being a mode, if you don't know about it, which is most portable Macs that have a FireWire port, and even desktop Macs, if when you boot the machine you hold down T and the computer is connected to another computer, it will appear, your hard drive on that computer where you held down T will appear as an external hard drive, which could be useful.
That's a good idea. I hadn't thought about that.
That's why I'm here.
That's why.
Now, if it's damaged, though, it may take a while for the other computer, because I think, especially if any computer sees another drive on the network that's, you know, obviously damaged, I think it'll try to clean it up or fix it up a little bit.
That's actually a good point. Yeah, it will. It may take a little while to mount. Absolutely. That's one thing. The reason the iPod won't boot it, is presumably you have a newer iPod that is USB based, and the older Macs, in fact, anything pre-Intel will only boot from FireWire externally. It will not boot from a USB device. I'd be at a hard drive or an iPod. Yeah, that's right. So
if you select it in startup disk?
Absolutely. Yep.
Really? Okay.
Really.
I don't know that because I haven't touched an Intel Mac as of late.
Right.
That's bad.
I mean, they fixed it, you know, but
oh, they did. Okay.
Well, yeah. I mean,
oh,
it's fixed.
Early. I'm sorry. Early machine.
Early. So yes. This is
firmware,
right.
Firmware OS update.
It's the firmware and the Intel Macs will allow it to boot from USB. So,
okay.
Yeah. So that's the reason that won't work. Now, what you can do is get yourself an external FireWire hard drive, or if you have one, that would work, or target disk mode like John suggested. If you don't have any of that for whatever reason, Micromat has their Tech Tool Protege, which is essentially just a FireWire hard drive or a FireWire flash drive, maybe? Is that what it is? I think it's just a flash drive, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's... Yeah, so it's RAM. Yeah,
it's RAM.
I don't think it's a little baby mechanical hard drive.
Yeah, no, it's not. Yeah, that'd be magic. Not quite. I like to say that.
Okay.
Afford me the luxury. Because they'll complain. So, I mean, I'm just looking for 20 minutes of luxury here. That's all. So the Tech Tool Protege allows you to, it comes with Tech Tool loaded on it, but there's enough room to also put something like you mentioned Disk Warrior or, you know, disk, any of the above, Drive Genius. Really, if I had to pick one, like Desert Island Disk Repair Utility, it'd be Disk Warrior. There's no question in my mind. It has been more reliable for me over the years with OS X than anything else. So,
I recognize the guy on their webpage.
Do you know?
Yeah.
Who is that?
Well, it's a doctor we know, I think.
Oh, is it Dr. Bob?
It appeared that way.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so... So that's my Desert Island Utility. That's what I would put on and do put on anything that I have. If you happen to have an old FireWire iPod, you can get the Tech Tool also makes another thing. It's called Pro2Go, I think, and it essentially builds you a protege on your older FireWire iPod or your USB iPod, but with the caveat that it won't boot anything other than an Intel Mac. So. But that's what you got to do. But really, I think he can start with single user mode because a lot of times you boot to single user mode, follow the instructions for FSCK, and if you were smart enough to have previously installed Applejack, you can use that too. So,
on closing thought, when you
John and I love troubleshooting, folks. So this is this is our thing.
Well,
so go
also,
ahead.
If you're starting up a Mac, make sure you hold down Option. Because it runs a little thing in memory that will look out and find all the things that are possibly bootable. Eventually, it may take a while.
A really
long
while.
I've actually done this on broken... especially if it thinks it should go to the network.
Right.
And I've seen this, you know, as a little tangent tip here. If you have a Mac where the startup disk is not set to be the hard drive, sometimes... things get a little confused, and it will instead decide to hunt on the network for something bootable rather than going to. So make sure you explicitly select, if you can, the hard drive in your computer is the boot drive, so you don't experience a slow startup.
Good point.
But the option gives you that menu, and eventually it will show you all devices. I think the problem is you can only use the keyboard.
That's
to
right.
Move,
no, you can
right
use the mouse.
Left. Are you thinking? Yeah, actually,
yeah, absolutely.
On the newer ones, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I'm thinking back. Okay, moving on.
Where are we time-wise here? We're done. I think so. Yeah, you know what? Actually, there's one thing I wanted to mention, and then we'll wrap it up. David wrote in. We were having a little conversation. He says, "Okay, here's my official Mac Geek Gab question, and unless you know the answer, John, this is a new geek challenge." He says, "I've worked with PCs for 20 years, but recently purchased my first Mac, an iMac 20-inch. The biggest adjustment in day-to-day operation changes with the Mac is when you copy a folder from one drive to another and are prompted to replace the files on the target drive. In the Windows world, to copy several folders to one another, and then the resulting folder is just a total aggregate of the three original source folders with the OS, with the original source folder." Now, this is written a little weird. Essentially, what he's trying to say is this. If you take one folder and copy it to another with OS X, if there's like-named files in there, with OS X, if there's a like-named folder in there, with OS X, the folder on the destination drive gets completely replaced by the source. In Windows... the contents of the folder are replaced, but anything that was in there previously that's not on the source drive remains there. And so it's more of a merge, if you will, a merge with overwrite capability than it is a copy on the Windows side. And so he asked, what's the best way to do this on OS X? Is there a way to make it merge instead of copy? Do you know the answer, John? Do you understand what I'm asking?
That means, yes, that means... no.
Oh, I see. Okay. I just wanted to make sure you understood, because if we're posing this as a geek challenge, I want to make sure I'm clear and got a little derailed in the middle of reading that email there. So, but if
geek
you grok the concept.
Challenge.
The geek challenge. So there it is. Yeah. We'll leave the reverb alone. You want me to do the reverb? All right, fine. Here we go.
No,
we're going to do it.
The geek challenge.
There we go. You okay now?
Yeah. Let the band in.
Oh, let's let the band in. See, if we let the band in, then it would have been really, really loud. So we just kind of got to fade them in a little bit. That's what the faders are for. That's why we need Soundflower, you see. And Audio Hijack and all of that good stuff.
Now I understand.
You understand the love now? It lets me use these faders. Yeah.
Yeah. I like faders. You're the bringer of much wisdom.
I guess. That's the goal.
I'd say that.
All right. 206-666-GEEK. Feedback.
4-3-3-5.
Thank you. Feedback at MacGeekGab.com is the preferred method of communication these days, just to keep everything as clean as we can. Mm-hmm. Next week, let's see, we got 2 weeks from now, we have what presumably will be our 100th show. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we have the time to put together a whole lot of fanfare, but I've got a couple of ideas about what you and I could do. No, you know, one thing, and it was actually suggested by one of you folks, that John and I could do is talk about our history of computing together, and though that might touch on some dangerous subjects, we will reserve the right to protect the innocent. But
statute of limitations is over, man.
But no, talking about all the computers that we had and maybe even, you know, how we met and all that good stuff would certainly be interesting for us and
someone.
For someone. There you go. Yeah, for anyone stalking us or researching us or perhaps trying to catch us. So we need to be careful.
The wife and kids will listen. And my family will listen.
There you go. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I've known John longer than I've known anyone else in my family, anyone else in my life except for my birth family. My blood family. I've certainly known John longer than I've known my wife, so... we have a long and varied past. Cashfly Hosting is where you've downloaded this show. The podcast marketplace this month includes the A5 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, Yojimbo from Barebone Software, one free download from Audible, and PDF Pen from Smile on My Mac. Backbeat Media Podcast Network is doing a fantastic job of keeping this show full. If you want to be on the show, that's who you talk to. Mm-hmm. And the Portable Media Expo is almost right around the corner. It's like 6 months away. It's at the end of September. Yeah, but you know what? That'll come up fast, man. WWDC's coming up. I actually bought my ticket today. For the first time, I'm going to WWDC, so it should be...
excellent.
It should be fun. Yeah.
You're going to have to work.
What? No.
Can't just schmooze and party and, you know, hang out with Steve.
No, that's work. You've seemed to forget. That's actually work. That's what keeps all this going, man, is all of that.
For you.
Yeah, that's what needs to happen. That's it. We're done, right? We're out of here? Yeah, 40-something minutes. We're good.
Yeah.
Do you have anything, any lasting words of wisdom to share, perhaps, John? Mm. Maybe something. 206-666-GEEK. Feedback at MacGeekGab.com. Skype to MacGeekGab. We've got some cool stuff that we found that we'll tell you about next week. It's just no time. I got no time. What do you have, John?
You don't have time? I don't get caught.
Made on Mac.
Do you think people get all the Spinal Tap references and all that stuff that we share?